My name is Brian Moto, current president of the Nisei Veterans Memorial Center. I'm a resident of Pukalani.
Were you born here?
Yes, I was. I'm a Maui boy. I grew up in Makua, and I went to local public schools and also to the University of Hawaii, and then went on to the mainland for law education, University of Michigan, and then went on to Divinity School, Yale Divinity School, and graduated from there. And then I moved back to Maui in 92, and I've been back since.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Oh, what a story. Okay. Leonard.
I'm Leonard Oka, and my dad was Clarence Heiichi. He had a nickname, Heka Oka, and he was with the 442nd Company L. Uh-huh. I'm the current, maybe lifetime, president of the Maui Sons and Daughters of the Nisei Veterans. Originally, it was called Maui Sons and Daughters. Well, yeah, was originally called Maui Sons and Daughters of the 442, because my father was with the 442, and that's how it all started.
I'm Hiroshi Arisumi, member of the 232nd Combat Engineers of the 442 Combat Team. And I was one of the original 442 one of the veterans, and fortunately, I mean, you know, on the front line every day that the engineers was in the front, and I was one of the few guys that came back without a scratch.
Oh my gosh. You grew up on Maui?
Yeah, I grew up on Maui. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Where?
Well, I was born in Olinda, Maui. Mm. That's way up in the country. And
what was it like those days, Olinda?
Oh, my dad was a guide to the crater. Haleakalau. And those days, only the rich people got to go and see Haleakalau. Cars couldn't go up there because there wasn't any room. But my father used to take people up to the mountain, Haleakalau, stay overnight with them, and bring them back to Olinda.
Hiking? How did they go? Horseback?
Horseback, yes.
Horseback. Mm-hmm. Wow. And so you grew, how big is your family? Mm-hmm. How big is your family?
Oh, we've got a big family. I'm the eldest of 10 kids in the family.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You're the oldest boy.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
Yeah, so when you got a family that big and you're the eldest, as soon as you graduate grammar school, you got to go to work.
What did you do?
Well, I wanted to be a carpenter, you know. So I was fortunate to get a job as a carpenter for a plantation. And then after that, when the U.S. government called to activate the 442 combat team, well, I was one of the first guys to volunteer, and I got taken to the, because I was a carpenter, I got taken into the 232nd combat engineer.
Mm-hmm. Why did you volunteer?
Well, you know, that's a good question. Somebody gotta go. And, well, you really didn't have to be myself. I figured I may as well go. So I volunteered.
What do you mean, may as well go? Why? Why did you want to go?
Well, at that time, you know, the army refused to take Japanese for the army. And that was a big shocker to all the AJAs in Hawaii.
Oh, yeah?
But then, when they asked for volunteers, they asked for 3,000 volunteers, but 10,000 of us went. And I was glad that I was one of the guys taken in that.
Why? Did you talk to your friends and everybody join together?
Well, I talked to some of my friends, yeah.
They wanted to go?
Oh, yeah, they wanted
to. Why?
Well, for one thing, we can assure them that us Japanese boys, we are just as much American as the other guys. So I volunteered and there were 10,000 other people that wanted to go.
I know my uncles, two of my uncles went.
Oh, yeah?
Yes. Yukio Hirata. Yukio Hirata. Kanjini Itsuma. They went, and I never got to talk to them about it.
Oh, yeah.
That's why you're getting all the questions.
Oh, yeah.
Because, you know, I want to know, like, were you thinking, oh, well, life in Olinda is so boring anyway, I might as well go?
Well, I used to live Olinda, but just about that time is when my parents moved down to Punene. Mm. And my father went to work for a plantation. Yeah.
Oh, he changed his job. Mm. Was it because you thought, I don't know, did you think about the GI Bill? That you could get the GI Bill?
No. At that time, we didn't even know about the GI Bill. But I'm glad I volunteered to go.
Really? Why?
Hmm?
Why?
Well, for one thing, we got to see the world, huh? Otherwise, you know, we couldn't go, you know.
Oh, did you think about that before you enlisted?
Yeah, I thought, well, good chance to see the mainland. It was a big break for us, you know, who got to join the 442 via.
Did you think about the danger?
Well, we know that it was dangerous, but it didn't matter to us.
Did you want to prove a point, or did you think it would be a great adventure?
Well, it was, at that time, it was more of an adventure for
Yeah, I can just imagine. All you guys went together.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You went to the mainland. And then where did you end up in Europe?
Oh, I went everywhere the combat team went. From Italy to France, back to Italy again, and Well, at the time, you know, we were young and it didn't matter where they sent us.
What was morale like?
Oh, the World War II, the combat team, their morale was always high morale, you know.
Why?
Well, I keep wanting. The people too, you know. Everybody had the same feeling when they went into a war. They wanted to show that we Japanese what our heart is American, yeah. And about that time, even while we were in the service, you know, a lot of guys didn't think too well of us Japanese. But fortunately, the 442 did well in combat, and you know, we saved the lives of lots of holy out people. You know, like the Lost Battalion.
Mm-hmm.
We lost a heck of a lot more men than that, than we, you know, we were able to save.
What did you think about that while you were there?
Well, we didn't think that was the best thing that the army did for us. We lost more men than we saved. But what can you do? When they tell us, hey, you gotta save these guys, you gotta go.
What was the bond between you guys, the 442 guys? You just always were thinking about Hawaii and you had so much in common. What was your bond with each other?
Well, the Hawaii guys, you know, they didn't think only about themselves. The way I see it, everybody was there thinking of the whole combat team, the whole U.S. Army. You know, it wasn't a, World War II wasn't a outfit to just think about ourselves, yeah.
Were you guys different, the ones who made it into the 442? Were you folks different from the other boys who were at that time, you know, in Hawaii?
Well, the only difference is when they asked for 3,000 men, 10,000 people volunteer and say, I'll go.
Did you think that was kind of amazing?
Mm-hmm.
Did you think that was kind of amazing at that time?
Well, I thought it was amazing, but the Hawaii guys, they really loved America. But people didn't think that way. Until after all, when AJs, you know, did well in combat, show what the AJs can do for the U.S. Army. Then people start to change. Until then, you know, until we went into combat, people didn't think much of the AJA. But after we went into combat and the AJA, you know, did well, most of the attitude of the people changed. And until then, they didn't care much about the AJAs. But today it's a different story.
I think that's true. People all over America changed after that.
Mm-hmm.
Did the Maui guys kind of stick together?
Oh, yeah. But we stick together, but the AJA is, you know, always felt that we were a combat team together, yeah?
Oh. You know, I wonder why this 442 stuff is so strong on Maui. How come?
Well, the 442 is kind of strong on Maui because we get people like Leonard. You know, he's the one that really keep the guys together. And today, I don't know how many 442 people are living today. Not too many, yeah?
Not too many, everything, yeah.
What do you think motivates him?
Well, he's got a big heart. I'm glad there is a person like Leonard keep everybody together.
Did you folks... I guess we look at what you folks did. We think you're so brave. But how could you guys ever be that brave?
Well, when you're in the army, you just gotta feel that way. every guy in the 442, when they volunteered, you know, they figured they're not coming back. But fortunately, a lot of us came back.
When you volunteered, you knew you might not come back.
Yeah, well, most of us, we thought, well, this is a one-way ticket. Never plan on coming back, but fortunately, a lot of guys came back, but unfortunately, a lot of guys didn't come back, too.
You know what's so weird? I'm trying to think today of people who would sign up for something knowing that they might not come back for an ideal, for a cause, for the reason you said. You're willing to die? To show people that AJAs are good Americans?
Well, that's what every guy in the 442 feel that, you know, they are good Americans. And you gotta die, you gotta die, that's all. Nothing you can do.
How did you get to feel about being an American? Here you were way out of the country of Maui, you know.
Well, I thought my feeling was really we are living in the best country in the world.
Really, what kind of country was America then? You felt proud of?
Well, we were proud of being an American, proud of everything, education, although I didn't go to school, but was proud of the people that went and did well in school, did well in life.
And being in the Army changed your life, huh?
Yeah. The Army really did change. I did change my life in a way.
How? Hmm. How did it change your life?
Well, because of the things that I learned in the Army, you know, I didn't get an education, but I went to get grade and on my own, I studied a lot there.
Oh, Leonard?
I'm not going to address that.
Okay.
You know, actually, I was very fortunate, you know, when I talked to a lot of other sons and daughters, they'll tell you that their fathers never told them anything.
Yeah, I know.
They don't even
know
that if they were 442, 100, Company L, Company M, whatever.
Yeah. You know,
my dad was different. He was a talker. And when my son was around, you know, when he was small, we used to go to Kihei to his house for lunch. And unusual, yeah? People sit down together for lunch, but because we went to visit. And he used to tell stories about everything, yeah, about high school, small kid time. And one of the things that he talked about was the, you know, 442nd, you know, his experiences in the war. So I was very fortunate because I got all those stories. Mm. And, you know, he kept on telling them. And unfortunately, I didn't record enough of it. But, you know, it inspired me that realizing that my son had this very, very important past to know about. And so first we started the Maui Sons and Daughters of the 442nd, again, because he was a 442nd member. And so we started with that, and we started to get more members in. Fortunately, you know, Maui is small, first of all.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of the people that the same age as me were also sons or daughters of 442 or 100 veterans.
Uh-huh.
So I knew a lot of them. So easier to start. But still then, you know, the problem at the beginning was just focusing, okay, because at the beginning you want to come together as a club, so you get Christmas party, Easter, you know, party, Halloween party, and all kind of parties, just socials to get them together. But somebody put me straight one time, and he said, he was from the Big Island, actually, and he said, you know, if it was only going to be for parties and stuff, we wouldn't have joined, okay? And then he explained that, you know, he thought that it was going to be more of an educational thing that he wanted to learn, okay? And that really put me in my place, set me straight in a different direction. And so we started to do other things, collecting, you know, memorabilia, documents. We even did some oral histories.
Wait, when did it start then?
Sons and Daughters actually started in 82. We started creating, started working on it in 81.
Okay.
But we were formally our first induction of our officers, not necessarily legally with our 501c3 and stuff, but just our first administration was in 82. And that was real neat because Sparky Masanov actually inducted us into the Sons and Daughters.
Hmm.
But so that's how it started, okay? And it was mostly because of my son. In fact, I blamed my son for 30 plus years of my life going into this because of him.
Okay? I hope he'll be ready to step in.
I don't think so, but you know, I wanted to make sure that you know, one day, whatever he's ready to learn, or in this case, not my granddaughter,
yeah.
that there will be something for him to go and look at. And, you know, I think we've gotten to that point for myself personally. So it started with that, with the Maui Sons and Daughters of the 442. But we realized that, and eventually what we did was somebody came up with this big idea that, you know, we get all these collection and stuff, we have to have a place to put it, okay? And we was discussing about it to see whether we're going to rent some place, you know, just somebody's house. And this guy said, okay, I think we will make one building. I wish he stayed around to help me make the building, but, you know, but he came up with the idea. So I give him credit for that because it was the best idea we had, although, you know, pretty far-fetched, pretty, it was a big dream. But we were fortunate because a lot of the veterans, like my dad, came from HCNS or A&B subsidiaries. So he said, we'll ask A&B for some land. They give it to the churches and other people. Why don't we go ask them? So at that time, the mayor of Maui County was Hannibal Tavares. Mm-hmm. And he was, previous to being mayor, he was a vice president of A&B, you know, running the operation on Maui. So he set up the meeting with Robert Pfeiffer, who was the chairman of the board. So we were pretty impressed. You know, we're going to meet with the chairman of the board of A&B, and including the mayor. We met at the mayor's lounge. So realizing that our sons and daughters are small potatoes, you know, we don't have the credibility, the reputation, you know, the history. You know, we invited several members. I believe Hiroshi was there that day, and we met at the mayor's lounge. And I forget how much longer it was that I got a call from then my representative, Garner Ivy. He said, oh, Leonard, come to my office. You know, we want you to go choose a piece of land that we have. So I was like, okay. You know, we didn't believe that it would happen. Mm-hmm. But, well, this was the only site. It was just a question of what part of the 6 acres we wanted. Yep. So knowing that we would get 2 acres, we had to decide what part of the 6 acres. So that's how it all started. That must have been like around 85 or 86 that we got the deed to the land. So, and there
then you had to really do something.
Yeah, that's what I was going to just say. That was the problem. Now we talked about it. We said we want to do all these things. Now we have to, right? It was, you know, like somebody gave you 2 acres of land. I guess you better do something, you know. It took us a while, you know, from when we got the deed of the land. We finally had our kickoff dinner for the building in 1991.
Oh.
Yeah. Oh. And so that took us a while to get organized.
What building, that one or this one?
Together.
Together,
yeah,
okay.
The whole complex,
okay.
Yeah. And this isn't how the original concept was, but, you know, it's on the site and the campus is the same. But realizing that, too, with the sons and daughters, again, being small potatoes, not having their reputation, we realized when we organized the NISEC Veterans Memorial Center, it actually started out as some Maui Sons and Daughters building project. But we realized that we had to bring in the veterans, the people who had the reputation already in the community, who's been business people, professionals, community leaders. And, of course, one of the first people we have to ask is Hiroshi Arizumi, okay, our Arizumi brothers. And, you know, he's done so much for the community, not only in his business, but in his, you know, nonprofits and everything else. But, you know, we had a lot of men like that, veterans.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had to bring them in. So we initially included the clubs, the 442nd Club of Maui, the Club 100 of Maui, Military Intelligence Service of Maui. We had AJA Veterans, Inc., and eventually we had West Maui AJA that was included. Okay, so we realized that we had to bring in these people with the reputations to make something like this happen. And so we worked very well together. And a lot of these guys were on the board of directors of the NISEC, which eventually became the NISEC Veterans Memorial Center. So that's how it all began. Just a small little concept, a seed that moved forward, you know, for 30 plus years.
Wow. How about in terms of programming? You know, how would you say that the programming for the education center? So now you've got a kupuna home,
you got
yes. it. Yes, yes. The Nisei Veterans Memorial Center has a number of aspects to it. First, it's among the first intergenerational centers in Hawaii, the idea being that it's a nonprofit that reaches out to the very young and the elderly, both, and brings those communities together here at the Kaolei campus with the current operators being Kancha Preschool and the Maui Adult Daycare Center. They run their respective operations. And the children and the seniors get together on a daily basis as part of their programs. And we serve as sort of the host site for that activity. We also are a neighbor to a property that's now owned by the Hawaiian Islands Land Trust. It's a Peace Park, a four-acre property. It once belonged to the center, and previous to that was owned by ANB. But that Peace Park is now owned and managed by the Hawaiian Islands Land Trust as conservation land, and also to honor all of Maui's veterans. The Education Center is the last and final phase of the campus, and it was opened about, let's say, 4 years ago. Time passes quickly. And it serves a number of functions. First, it's a service as a repository and, for many of the artifacts from Maui's veterans of the 442nd and 100th Battalion and MIS. It also serves as our administrative offices, and now as a combination exhibit space and community meeting space for all kinds of activities, seminars, lectures, book signings, relating to our mission. One of the things we have striven to do is to be relevant to the community we serve, because we very much see ourselves as a community resource. It is based on the contributions, the heroism, and service of Maui's AJA veterans, but it is very much a community organization, and we feel that it's a resource for all people. And to that end, our mission strives to be relevant to current generation, and majority of people weren't even alive when World War II occurred. And we are very much looking forward to the future and how the story of Maui's Nisei veterans and other veterans from throughout the state can serve to inspire and inform people. In fact, our mission statement is that we hope to ignite human potential by encouraging people to find the hero in themselves through the legacy of the Nisei veterans.
How do we do that?
We think that one of the big resources are the stories themselves, of the veterans, because like Mr. Arizumi, whom you just interviewed. First of all, it's a local story. We're talking about people who are from the islands, who grew up here. Many of them experienced poverty. They were people of the Depression, so they know what hardship is like. They came from often plantation families, so their ancestors, their families worked on the sugar plantations, the pineapple plantations, in the warehouses and on the docks. Many of them struggled to get an education. Many of them built careers and businesses after the war, and maintained very close bonds of that only veterans can share amongst themselves and their families, supporting each other, encouraging each other through many decades. That example, I think, at the same time being ordinary people and at the same time being people who did extraordinary things, the ordinary doing extraordinary things, is a model, an example that we think can be replicated In other words, the best way to honor their legacy is to be like them.
Think about this, Leonard.
One of the keys, I think, for the Nisei veterans, and let me just clear up one thing, that when we talk about the center, we talk about not only the 442nd, but we talk about the 100th Battalion, the Military Intelligence Service, and the 1399. The 1399, lots of times, is left out. They were the Nisei veterans that served at home in Hawaii, in primarily in Honolulu, serving the war effort, building its engineering battalion. So they did a lot of the construction in Hawaii at that time. So people forget that these Nisei men were soldiers that served their country in a different way, not in Europe, not in the South Pacific. Okay, but, you know, the common element I think that, you know, all of these men had was their upbringing. Okay, and that's why it's important to tell the story going back to the Issei. And then these Niseis were raised with values that the Issei parents, you know, shared with them.
What values were those, do you think?
You know, like honor, you know, I think they showed the gambate, you know, going for it, or, you know, go for broke type of attitude that they had. But humility, you know, there was a lot of, I'm going blank right now, but I'm thinking that there was a whole bunch of values that there was just part of their life, I think, that in their upbringing. I don't think that they had to be taught in a school, but the parents taught them all these things. You know, don't bring shame to the family. You know, you're always going to hear that about these guys who volunteered. The parents said, you know, if you got to go, even if you got to die, you go. But don't bring shame to the family, okay? So, you know, all that kind of stuff that they grew up with, and they lived it. Their parents lived it, the Issei parents, the Niseis. It was just ingrained in them. And I think that's important, that these type of values be continued. I don't think they teach these type of things in school anymore, you know. But maybe, unfortunately, it doesn't, because, you know, I don't think the family structure is allowing that to be taught, you know, not directly, you know, or not as strongly. But I think just growing up in that atmosphere, in that, you know, that environment in a family situation, I think it's just, that's why they did good. They didn't have to think about it. They just, it was in their brain, in their heart. Yeah, they just lived it. And I think that's why they did so well in battle. Yeah. And I think that's a key that needs to be passed forward.
Where did go for broke come from? And what is, do people get that, get it now, do you think, you know? Remember, I mean, suck 'em up is not a good example, but I mean, there used to be all these phrases that people really understood and actually acted out those phrases. Go for broke, I never hear anybody say that anymore, and I just don't know if people know how to do that anymore.
Well, we have right there on the wall a panel that talks about the historical basis for the go for broke
you
slogan.
Tell me, what?
Yes, it comes out of the dice game of craps.
It does.
Yes, yes. our fathers were fun loving guys, and one of the things that some of them liked to do was gamble and during their spare time, and going for broke while throwing dice. Well, that's what they did sometimes, but then I think that. That same spirit, that same enthusiasm was something that they always remembered and they applied in different contexts. whether they were throwing dice or not.
There's a story that, you know, when they traveled from Hawaii to the mainland to go to Camp Shelby, that's all they had to do. You know, either you're sick on the boat, or, you know, to keep yourself occupied, you gambled. You know, a lot of them, you know, shot craps, you know, dice, yeah. So I think that was a very popular phrase. In fact, somebody joked about it and said, when these guys left Hawaii, they took a lot of money with them, you know. So, but the 442nd were fortunate, you know, they had time, they had family that sent them off, so they gave them money and stuff like that. The 100th Battalion was a different story. So, you know, people have to understand it. When we talk about these different groups, there is different stories, different situations that happened. And without going into detail, I just wanted to make sure people understand that there is different stories, and we cannot generalize that everybody was a 442nd veteran. Yeah. So that's how we use the term, Nisei Veterans Memorial Center. It encompasses all the groups, the 100, 442, MIS, and the 1399. So what we talk about, the 442, is specific to them. Yeah.
Oh, gosh, thanks for that education. I did not know.
Yeah. In fact, some groups feel hurt that we generalize so much with the 442nd name. So.
Uh-huh. I like that, where just thinking about how people are brought up to be a certain kind of person.
I think the parents didn't think about what kind of person they wanted, other than to be good, right? Live good lives, be good citizens. And whatever the values were, all was towards that goal, right? Just to be a good person.
What keeps you persistent in this, endeavor?
Another trait of the veterans, I always used to make fun of it. I used to use the phrase, Japanese, hothead Japanese old man. And I think I've become that. And so the persistence is ingrained in me. Yeah. And just kept on going, from, like I said, from 1982 till today, contributing somehow, to the, the history of the, Nisei veterans. So, if nothing else, I think that's it. Hard hit. Yeah.
Mr. Arisumi, remember they used to say Maui no ka oi? I'm from Oahu.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Is Maui no ka oi, is that true?
Well, it means Maui is the best. But not like Goofy World. When I was a small kid, I used to hear that term, Goofy World.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
What are they talking about?
Even when you're playing Marvel, Goofy World. Take out a whole bottle of marble.
Yeah, right.
Gamble on that. Yeah, like kind of old sayings, how to forget. Yeah. Remind you of the days that you used to use the kind of thing like, go for broke.
I know. Any other phrases like that we should remember?
Come to our age, forget a lot of things, yeah?
Gambatte, a lot of Japanese say that, but that was too... Local boys didn't say that.
Yeah, local boys not much, okay. Yeah.
I think Ofo Broke is a takeoff on that, Gambatte, yeah?
Yeah. Jeez, guys, we've done so well. Help me now. I'm looking at your Maui people, the young people here. How do you think you can help them to grow up with some of these values?
I think one thing that can be done is to spend time with them and to invite them to be part of our extended family. Hawaii is a place of ohana and also of community. It is one of the most diverse places in America, probably among the most diverse in the entire world. And so we are accustomed, fortunately, to to think in terms of that diversity, regardless of nationality, ethnic background, even language, culture, and the like. There is no reason why the legacy of the Nisei veterans or other heroes in our community, and there are many others who come from other communities, why their examples cannot be replicated, cannot be, first of all, appreciated, learned about, talked about, and then promoted and shared with others. There are not many places, really, or occasions when younger people especially probably spend time thinking about values and values education, thinking about things like what does it mean to be brave? What does it mean to overcome hardship? What hardships are there, and how do we deal with them? What kind of help can we get? What does it mean to be someone's comrade, someone's brother or sister, especially in times of hardship or challenge? You know, people may not be members of the military service or may not be fighting on the battlefield, but there are many occasions when people confront tough times or tough situations, and one of the things that we hope that we all can learn is how if we work together, if we bond with each other, we can deal with these issues better, more successfully. In a way, the Intergenerational Center reflects that basic concept about bringing people together, bringing different generations together, not keeping them separate, but allowing them to learn from each other, respect each other, love each other. That's the kind of model I think that can be demonstrated here and elsewhere.
What do you think?
To introduce yourself first.
Yes, maybe you should. I think you should, Deidre.
My name is Deidre Teagarden, and I have the distinct privilege and honor of being the executive director here at the Nisei Veterans Memorial Center, a job which every day just brings such amazing stories, opportunities to share this legacy and these stories and the sacrifices of these brave men and women. You know, the men were fighting, the families were here at home, and they were also had sacrifices that they had to do on a daily basis. And, you know, acting as closure many times for people who come through the center. But, you know, specifically, we have done a lot to reach out to the community to let people know that you don't necessarily need to be American of Japanese ancestry to understand and learn from these stories. You don't have to be a World War II buff either. That these stories, as I think both, as all gentlemen here today have said, really American stories. That these are values that we all share, and the values of the Nisei veterans are not dissimilar to the values of Aloha.
You know, sometimes I think people are asked, what is the greatest challenge that a human being will face? I remember a psychology professor telling me a long time ago, and this was in a class, that he thought the greatest psychological challenge that humans would face is boredom. Boredom. That was how he described it. I would tweak that a little bit. What I would say is the greatest challenge that human beings encounter in their lifetime is purpose. What am I supposed to do? What am I supposed to be? And sometimes some people don't ever quite know, right? It's a challenge. And what we're trying to do is to provide that sense of purpose, that there is, when one identifies with and learns about the values of honesty, hard work, community, life begins to have a purpose, or could, depending on the individual's background, their talents, their abilities. There is purpose in the basic values that we're trying to promote. I think that's how there can be centeredness. I think that's one reason why the Nisei veterans were so resilient and successful in their civilian life, not to mention in their combat role, is because they kind of, all through their lives, lived that those values and those purposes. They remained true to those things. They knew what hard work was like, and they worked hard all their lives. They knew the importance of being positive and having a positive attitude, not dwelling on the past too much, but trying to make the best of life for themselves and their families. And I think they certainly succeeded.
I have never heard, the correlation between having values and from that purpose evolving. Maybe you might have something there. You know, what do you think about that? I mean, is that how it works for the next generation? And then the one after that, your granddaughter?
Well, it's interesting hearing Brian say that, because I think that's the first time I've heard it put that way, so eloquently. And, you know, I agree that purpose in life, I think, is important. You can put everything else, but you need some purpose. You know,
otherwise, it's not easy to find. You don't just stumble across it. People don't know where to even ask that.
Well, that's why I think some people will look for purpose, and some people, they're just happy to live their life. But if the Nisei Veterans Memorial Center can open some eyes, open some ears, open some hearts, I think in that way they can serve that purpose, yeah, and maybe bring a few more people to discover their purpose in life. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much, you folks. I know you have to go soon, too. Did you have any other thoughts, Mr. Arisumi?
At my age, you forget a lot of things and can't think of something I'd like to say. But.
Can I ask you one more question?
Mm-hmm.
You know, how do you think volunteering for the Army and then going to war, seeing so many people die, seeing everything you saw, including going to foreign countries, and probably you gambled and met some women as well. How did all this?
Well, I think going to the service was the best thing that happened to me. Went to places which I have never gone, and I like Europe so damn much. One year I took my son and my daughter. They went to Europe.
Really? Oh, must have been so different.
Everything was different. Wherever there was a battle, there was foxholes, now that covered with weeds. And can't imagine what it was like before.
You look at the values of the Nisei veterans, you look at the value of respect, you look at the value of honor and compassion, mm-hmm. and how can we look at those values to help us get through our daily lives and our daily struggles. Whether or not you agree with the person sitting across from you, you should still be able to respect them as a human being and know that you are both going after the greater goal of what's best for the community. The 100th Battalion, when they were at a meeting in 1952 at their clubhouse in Honolulu, they decided to adopt as their motto, continuing service. And that manifested itself in many different ways on each of the islands, but the overall message was continuing service for that next generation. How are we going to take our experiences, how are we going to take what has happened to us and make it better for that next generation? So even though the men didn't always agree on topics, they all agreed to the core foundation of continuing service and making things better for the community. So I think at the Nisei Veterans Memorial Center, that's what we are trying to promote, that whatever we do it in a way that is respectful, and we do it in a way that makes the community better. We do it for the greater good of the community.
I guess what I liked about when I first heard about your programs, the Education Center, was that there was some idea that, I mean, it was the focus on values as something that needed to be carried forward.
Yes. I mean, you look at these men, and they weren't given any responsibility. Their responsibility was taken away because they were Americans of Japanese ancestry. Their parents and their families were put into internment camps. There was great prejudice and racism against them. The government did not trust them. Yet, in spite of all of that, they decided to fight for their nation, to prove that they were good Americans, to make sure that they didn't bring shame on their families, to do what they could do to make their parents proud, to carry on for that next generation in spite of everything. Loi Kitaoka, who was with the 100th Battalion Club in Honolulu, his father was Judge Kitaoka from Hana. And in a video that Lloyd did of his father, right before his father passed at the age of 102 or 3, I think, he asked his father, you know, what was it that meant so much to you? And the father said, we received so many accolades, so much, you know, support from the community, but when Harry Truman said to us when giving out these awards, he said, you fought not only the enemy, you fought prejudice here at home, and you won. If these men and their families, because there was a lot of horrible things that happened to the families, if these men and their families could fight for our nation and support our nation and take it to that next level to make sure that the next generation and the generation after that is successful in spite of all the prejudice that they encountered, then we too can do the same in our daily lives. No matter what the opposition is, we can hold on to those values and make sure that we conduct ourselves in a way that would make these men proud or make them feel assured that what they gave up for us has been carried forward.